ABC Radio Australia.
First, though, the situation in Solomon Islands remains calm after several days of rioting in the capital Honiara at the end of last week. But there are fears that unless underlying issues which triggered the troubles are addressed, then they could flare up again. Australian and Papua New Guinean troops and police officers are already on the ground and they'll soon be joined by a contingent from Fiji later today. However, the Premier of Malaita Province, from where the anti-government protesters who converged on Honiara originated, has described Australia's intervention as unhelpful. And in his words, it's keeping a corrupt Prime Minister in power. But Prime Minister Manessa Sogavare says that foreign assistance is entirely appropriate.
I mean, what he's asking there is for government to be left to the mercy of criminals and hooligans and to pull down a democratically elected government. And if that's what you're supporting, that's not right.
Now, rumours that the Sogavare government was going to bring a premature end to the latest session of Parliament proved to be unfounded when MPs sat yesterday. So a no-confidence motion tabled by the opposition should get a hearing, but is unlikely to get over the line. And the Solomon Islands Chinese Association have put out a statement condemning, in the strongest possible terms, the looting and burning of shops and properties which endangered the lives and livelihoods of so many individuals and families. While they acknowledge that it was a small minority who were responsible for the looting and burning, they say many Chinese individuals and families have lost everything and are homeless as a result. Talia Olatia has been speaking to William Lai, the president of Solomon Islands Football Federation and a prominent member of the Chinese community, who says his people are paying the price for the political situation.
I think it's a sad story. I think, you know, with this pandemic years, and now it's looting and burning of the buildings. It's very sad indeed for Honiara and for Solomon as a whole.
We saw that the Chinese Foreign Ministry was calling on the Solomon Islands government to protect Chinese citizens and businesses during the unrest. Do you think members of the Chinese community will continue to live in the Solomon Islands, or is there a chance that they could pack up and leave concerned for their safety and well-being in the future?
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest, when I was small boy, the Chinese community is very small. But now it's expanded so much. So definitely, unfortunately, some of the people will be living and will never come back because they lost everything. Yeah. I've been told that yesterday, there's about 539 people registered to go back to China. Yeah. Whether they're going permanently or I don't know, but to be honest, some of them, I feel really sorry for them because they lost everything. Maybe they have been here for a few years or 10 years or more, but you know, the fire and everything, they lost everything. I don't know how they're gonna start again. You know, I mean, that's a very question I'm wondering too, because you know, even myself for the last three nights or 3 days, I was so stressful because I get some security, you know, it's a security to get my building to ensure they don't burn, you know. So yeah, I think it's a difficult question because I think some of them definitely they don't want to come back. But having said that, there's others, if the economy is right, they will come. You know, Chinese people, I think they want to make a living wherever they want to go. So yeah.
Do you get a sense that this is going to continue to be an ongoing issue, that, you know, every time someone is mad at the government about whatever they're doing, that it's going to be Chinese businesses or the Chinese community in Solomon Islands that will inadvertently get targeted just because of the historical nature of what's happened there?
Yes, I think so. I think they need to be changed, the mindset, because the important thing for us in Solomon Islands is that geopolitics is not for the Solomon Islanders to play. Also, the important is what's the best for Solomon Islands. You know, I think there's so many things talk about this, you know, your allegiance to that. I think we need to change the mindset of the people. I think if we play too much of on the land, the nation will be in a difficult future. You know, Chinese is targeted because they got buildings, they got better well-beings. But as a nation, I think we all suffer from this nonsense.
William Lai there talking to Talia Oletia. Now, disaster officials are turning their attention to the crisis that does remain in Solomon Islands. Hundreds of people are without work and more than 50 businesses have been damaged or destroyed. And there are concerns that Honiara will face severe food shortages and price hikes. I'm joined now by Lottie Yates, the director of Solomon Islands National Disaster Management Office, who is leading the emergency team there. Good morning, Lottie.
Good morning.
Lottie, firstly, how are things on the ground at the moment?
Thank you very much. On ground, things are quiet. Calm has returned. But there is still this feeling of uneasiness in the atmosphere. People are going about things, doing the normal things now, but very cautious of something might happen. You know, that sort of sense of uneasiness is still hanging in there.
There are Australian and Papua New Guinean troops and police officers already in Soles, and they're going to be joined by a contingent from Fiji today. How do you think that could impact that feeling and atmosphere of uneasiness?
Well, there are two sides to everything. When you look at what had happened, it was a challenge to the government of the day. The mindset is set to challenge whatever the government is putting in place. Now, this I see would have two sides to it. One is the presence of foreign forces in country might set a light or get a challenge through by the instigators of what had happened. For those who wish to live in peace, I think the presence of the foreign troops are welcomed, and it sort of brings a sense of normalcy bike to the community. Thus, the sense of uneasiness that is still being felt around the communities here.
And while you're currently in the midst of a bit of calm, despite everything that has happened, what are your main priorities at the moment in terms of dealing with the damage that has come from everything? I understand there's about 52 businesses that were badly damaged and a total damage bill of about 40 million Australian dollars. What are you focusing on right now?
A priority for the NDMO that is providing support to the National Disaster Operations Committee of the National Disaster Council. Priority for us would be looking at a phased approach, or maybe targeting the impacts firstly, targeting the humanitarian imperatives that resulted from the burning and looting and the destructions that had happened. You see, for every shop that is burnt down, the impact so far is this. One, most of the Asian workers would be living at the back of the shop or just above on the second or third floor of the shop. And this shop would be employing, a medium-sized shop would be employing up to about four or five Solomon Islanders. The bigger ones will go up to 20, 30, or even 50. Now, when you look at that, the impact itself not only is affecting the Asian worker or the business owner, it is also impacting on the people who earn salaries to feed their families. So for every five person that is employed in a business house, they would be responsible for feeding. You know, Solomon Islands lives and thrives on extended family network, that safety net that provides for families to be together. And extended family is a much practiced, you know, formal living in a setting in a village or in a house in Honiara. So for every five persons that have been affected, you know, basically what this means is that these five people would have lost their job. So their income would also be gone. Now, the 5 to 10 people that relied on these five people would be affected. So you will be looking at, for every five people, it will be impacting on about 20 to 30 other persons at home. So you can see what I'm saying here, that maybe it is impacting on up to 500 or 600 Chinese or Asian workers, because it's not only Chinese we're talking about here. Most of the business houses here employ Filipinos. So the impact would be such that, one, you have a person living in the shop, the shop's gone. Now that person becomes an internally displaced person.
So there's quite an extensive flow-on effect of all those impacts that is happening. Yes. You were talking there
not
just before.
Not only that, an IDP that escaped the fire with their legal documents would be an IDP. But what happened when all your passports and everything is burned down? See, again, this could be a refugee issue.
And you're talking about a phased approach. What does that look like?
So we are dealing with the humanitarian imperatives first and foremost. Like first, maybe today and tomorrow, we are deploying the three sectors that deals with humanitarian imperatives that are set down under the government disaster management arrangement. This is the protection committee, the livelihood committee, and the camp management committee that deals with IDPs. They will support Solomon Island Red Cross that will be going out to do a formal registration of the internally displaced persons and getting all the information that I just shared with you earlier, so that that could then give us a picture on, you know, the population that is affected first and foremost. So we deal with the humanitarian imperatives. The next would be the assessment of damages, mostly buildings. So we are likely to deploy engineers, architects to do an assessment and a detailed assessment of costs, etc. We will have people, economists or whoever we can employ to ensure that we get a good picture of economic loss, you know, loss and damage, and putting a figure to it, the social impacts and the rest. The initial assessment by central bank has come out, going up to about more than 200 plus million Solomon dollars on damage. So that is an initial assessment, but when we have the detailed assessment done, we would then have a clear picture of what had happened. But it's not only that. One other thing that is of concern for us is disposal, safe disposal of the waste. You know, all the burnt materials. We are deploying, or we are having a meeting with a hazmat team from the Solomon Island Fire Service, along with the environmental team here, the waste management team here, as well as the Ministry of Infrastructure that deals with asbestos. So this assessment of risks and also safe disposal of what is left after the burning is also a priority for us now, because I'm pretty sure insurance companies and business owners would like to go in and clean up, but we need to be guided on the safe disposal of hazardous materials that resulted in the burning. Because we had business houses that sells fertilizers and farming materials and all that sort of thing being burned down. So consequences of that burning would also have some hazardous materials that are left there. So for safety purposes, and asbestos, of course, is an issue that needs to be dealt with. So
yeah,
we will go the humanitarian imperatives, the assessment and getting detailed information, and then maybe the third phase would then to consolidate what is there, put a cost to it, and then have it to government to have a look at.
Well, Lottie, it's hopefully that period of calm remains and the atmosphere of uneasiness does ease for you so that you have that ability to roll out all those phases of recovery there. Thank you so much for joining me here on Pacific Beat and giving us an update on what's happening on the ground.
Thank you very much.
That was Lottie Yates. He's the director of Solomon Islands National Disaster Management Office, who is leading the disaster team's response.